Hello, and welcome to the Glenveagh 2020 full year results call. My name is Rosie, and I'll be your coordinator for today's event. Please note this call is being recorded, and for the duration, your lines will be on listen only. However, you will have the opportunity to ask questions at the end. This can be done by pressing star one on your telephone keypad to register your question at any time. If you require assistance, please press star zero and you'll be connected to an operator. I will now hand you over to Stephen Garvey to begin today's conference. Thank you.
Thank you, Rosie. Good morning, and welcome to the 2020 final results for Glenveagh Properties. Joining me on the call today are my colleagues, Michael Rice, our CFO, and Conor Murtagh, Director of IR and Strategy. To start, can I ask you to please turn to page four and results highlights. Reservations and completions. Customer leads +169% in H2 2020. Average weekly private reservation rate per site +31% in H2 2020. 950 units sold, signed, or reserved, or 83% of our target deliveries for 2021. Construction capabilities. 700 units now sold, completed in 2021, 17% down on 2019 deliveries. 23 sites open since IPO, with a further six sites scheduled to open in 2021 once present restrictions are lifted. With construction being allowed to operate during the January period to complete private housing and all social developments allowed to complete up to the 28th of April, the company can now reaffirm its target of 1,150 units for 2021. This is +36% versus our 2019 deliveries. Capital management. 91 million deduction in land investment achieved to date, while still maintaining the same number of plot numbers in the business. Target investment of 202 million in work in progress investment underpins our 1,150 unit completions in 2021. Net cash position of 36 million euros versus 53 million euros in 2019. Overall, a robust performance in 2020, demonstrating the operational capability, which gives us comfort to deliver our 2021 targets. Turning to page five. Our approach to living and working with COVID. Firstly, the health and safety and wellbeing of all our people were prioritized during the period. COVID-19 operating procedures are fully embedded across the business. Oversight and enforcement controls are delivering internal and external validation of our operating procedures. Emphasis on operational delivery has positioned the group to deliver a comparatively strong outturn in 2021. Moving to page six, the financial summary, which Michael will cover in more detail in the financial section. The key highlights, revenue of 232.3 million primarily relates to the sale of 700 units across 16 selling sites. Core gross margin of 14.1% includes the impact of COVID-19 costs and adverse sales mix. Targeted WIP investment of just under 202 million versus 172 million in 2019 leaves the business well-positioned to deliver in 2021. Significant net assets of 853 million and a strong net cash position of 36 million at year-end. Completion now of a new five-year 250 refinancing comprising of a component of 100 million term and 150 RCF leaves the business well-positioned for 2021 and beyond. Turning to page eight. The demographics continue to support a strong housing need. Continued population growth and age profile are key contributors to the growing housing need in Ireland, as per the charts on the right. In the 12 months to April 2020, the population grew by 1.1%, or 56,000 people. Natural increase of 27,000 and a net migration of 29,000 all contributed to this. A large cohort of the population, or just under 1 million people, are now at the key home buying phase. Further growth to 2030, or just over 8%, or 380,000 people, is expected. Our headship rate remains one of the highest in the EU. Moving to page nine. The Irish economy has remained resilient. Economically, Ireland entered 2020 with good momentum, neutral fiscal position, robust GDP growth, and a growing labor market, all supported by the multinational sector of pharma and IT. Ireland was one of the few countries globally to experience growth in GDP in 2020. All of this allowed the Irish government to implement a fiscal expansion to cushion the blow of the pandemic for our people and our economy. Looking at the core domestic demand, however, performance was more closely aligned with our European peers, which you can see on the next slide. Savings rate. The reduction in consumer spending combined with earnings growth has led to a spike in household savings. Savings levels is now the highest in the EU. Spending redirected to other areas such as home improvement and property acquisition. And we have seen this across our recent reservations with notable increases in deposit levels from our customers. Turning to page 11. Lower paid sector and younger age categories continue to be the worst affected by the pandemic. Ireland's lockdown is one of the most stringent and long-lasting in a global context. This required significant financial measures to be introduced by the Irish government to support those worst affected. Ultimately, this is having a limited impact on housing demand, given the income and age profiles of the persons most affected. Turning to page 12. The government have acted to support future housing supply. The first budget of the new government announced in October following the July stimulus package has had a number of key measures. The first one, expansion of Help to Buy from €20,000 to €30,000. Two, a five-year targeted increase in the social housing stock of up to 50,000 units. 13,000 units expected to be delivered in 2021. This is expected to have to require direct purchases from developers at market rates. Three, the shared equity scheme. Expected to be modelled on the UK scheme with cap values of approximately €400,000. Anticipated to be activated in H2 2021. Four, new rental tenure created of cost rental. Target of 400 units in 2021, with expected funding to grow in the future periods if the model is proven to be successful. Five, infrastructure. Increased funding for utility providers such as Irish Water. Also, new mechanisms created to facilitate the delivery of infrastructure works outside of the site boundary in conjunction with developers. Finally, the Land Development Agency Bill has just been published. It sets out the functions of the Land Development Agency, which are wide-ranging. This is expected to ensure the faster delivery of houses on state land, ultimately in with partnership with the private sector. Turning to page 13. Commencements have heavily been impacted by COVID-19 restrictions. A pronounced drop-off in commencements due to the closure of construction sites as per the charts on the right, had a drastic effect. The decline is most evident in the Greater Dublin area, excluding Dublin. Greater weighting of apartments and low levels of land transactions will also have an impact on future deliveries. And we are seeing the smaller developers not progressing their sites on the ground. Turning to page 15, and our strategic focus remains unchanged. Disciplined investment across the three target segments of suburban, urban and partnerships, scaling and standardising the processes of our construction capability, delivering for our customers in places that they want to live at prices that they can afford, optimising our capital employed in land and work in progress, while all the time pursuing our environmental and social agenda. All of these strategic focuses will deliver strong returns for shareholders into the future. Turning to page 16, our complementary business segments remain highly attractive. Suburban, the deepest demand in the market, particularly for our suburban product. Most fragmented supply, particularly with the smaller developers. Aligned with buyer income and buyer aspirations. Easier optimization of construction process. Urban, a structured occupier shift to rental product. The institutionalisation of the rental sector, which is also being supported by government. Capital light, where forward funds can be applied, gives the business long-term earnings visibility. Partnerships, strong return on capital employed, increases business resilience and reduces cyclical risk to the business. Fits with both suburban and urban segments of the business and gives the business access to both land and deliveries into the future. Moving to page 17, and our development portfolio has been strategically designed to implement all of this. 80% of our portfolio is located in the Greater Dublin area, where the most housing need is required. 96% of our portfolio is targeted at the affordable end of the market below €450,000. The 70% of the portfolio is in the suburban side of the business, where we see the strongest demand. But ultimately, we have optionality in the business, where we can deliver almost 43% of the suburban product for PRS or institutions as well. Turning to page 19 and the operational review. Construction progress. 23 sites opened since IPO, 5 completed sites, including 2 non-core of high-end sites, actively constructing on 18 sites during 2020 in the pandemic. Visibility now on 6 new opening sites in 2021, once that will deliver for the business in 2022, once present restrictions are lifted. Turning to page 20. Planning and infrastructure progress. Planning status of the land bank has transformed rapidly, as per the chart in the middle. 23 applications granted or awaiting decision. 13 applications or 1,600 units successful. 10 applications or 2,000 units awaiting decision. 7,000 units at pre-lodgement or design stage. Overall, 70% of the land bank is expected to be planned or lodged by year end. Looking at the chart on the far right, I think this shows the progress that the business has really made during COVID. In 2018, less than 3% or just under 10 units of the 275 units we delivered had utility connections. Fast forward to 2021, and that is now at 85%, which completely de-risked the delivery for 2021 once restrictions are fully lifted. Now the team is starting to turn their focus on deliveries into 22 and 2023. Turning to page 21, and a new product that we are bringing to the market. The Irish planning system increasingly encourages higher densities, up to 40 to 50 units per hectare in our suburban locations, which forces a large element of apartments on those developments. We have brought the first of the kind of a kind scheme where more own door housing can be delivered on schemes, which eliminates an extreme large portion of our apartments. What are the benefits? Development standards for private and public open space are maintained. But ultimately, we are enhancing the living environment for our future customers. And this is also bringing more viability to our schemes in these locations. Moving to page 22. Infrastructure-led delivery. How we have recalibrated the business in 2020. Developer-led solutions in partnership with infrastructure suppliers such as Irish Water is increasing the pace of our site connections. This has facilitated an infrastructure-led approach to our housing sites, which has brought across several benefits. Firstly, focus site development teams where they concentrate solely on infrastructure services and utility. This has optimised the lead time between the site development works and when superstructure can start on site. This has all led to de-risking and removing downstream delays in the process. The benefits on the cost side, we're seeing a reduced preliminary cost on our sites, improving our timelines and leaner construction when superstructure can start, and the ability, once superstructure does commence, to ramp up volumes on those sites. Turning to page 23 and our customer offering. Investment in the redevelopment digital strategy is facilitating an online private viewing-led customer journey. Show houses now operate with smart technology, allowing for a contactless walkthrough when permitted under the COVID-19 restrictions. These initiatives have helped to improve the quantity and the quality of our customer leads, which grew by 169% in H2 2020. Average weekly reservation rates per site grew by 31% in the same period, reflecting both the improved quality of our leads and the pent-up demand. What are we doing going forward? We are now starting to target our buyers 12 months before our developments ever commence. We are targeting our buyers when they are thinking of buying a home, not when they want to buy a home. This is helping to add to our database, so when we do launch developments, we have a substantial reservation list. Moving to page 24, our sales for 2020. Continuous sales outlets and new openings delivered 700 units for the business in 2020. strong reservations from core and non-core selling sites, with 950 units now sold, signed or reserved for 2021. New launches at existing new sites have seen really strong demand in the first number of weeks of 2021. This has reduced the amount of stock remaining on these phases, and the team can now start focusing before the summer on building the order book for 2022. Moving to sustainability on page 26 and our approach. Sustainability pillars are aligned with the group's strategic objectives. Putting our customers at the heart of what we do, while creating sustainable homes and communities for them to live in. Environmentally considerate and efficient operations. How we plan our work, but more importantly, how we deliver on that work, while at all times partnering with our supply chain. Attracting, inspiring, investing and training in our people, while at all times keeping our people safe. These are all anchored by governance, commitments, KPIs, and risk management. Finally, turning to page 17, sustainability report highlights. For 2020, we've made a commitment for dropping our CO2 emissions by approximately 25%. 72% of our overall portfolio is affordable homes. All our homes today from November 2020 have a minimum energy rating of A2, and with minimum modifications and investment can be brought to an A1 standard. And finally, our B grading in our CDP score for 2020 has been a phenomenal achievement for the business in its first outturn on this. I'd like to pass you over now to Michael, who will go through the financial section in more detail.
Thanks, Stephen, and good morning, everyone. As Stephen mentioned, Glenveagh's performance for 2020 was significantly impacted by the outbreak of COVID-19. Our construction sites were closed for a six-week period in April and May due to the government enforced lockdown, which is normally one of our most productive times of the year. During the shutdown and on reopening, cash management was hugely important for the business, with our focus on finishing the units closest to completion to ensure quick and recurring cash generation. Having reviewed the impact of COVID-19 on the business, we amended a number of our key financial targets for 2020 at the time of our interim results in September, including delivery and margin targets. The group's original delivery target of 1,000 units was amended to 650 core units, with additional non-core units to be delivered over an accelerated timeline of 12 months to 30 June 2021. Our gross margin target for 2020 was reduced by approximately 400 basis points to 14% due to longer construction programs, increased health and safety measures, and the cost of inefficiencies on site due to social distancing. Starting on slide 29, our income statement for the year. Total group revenue for the year was $232 million, with all but $1 million of that relating to unit sales from our 700 unit completions. Our core revenue from 665 units was $207 million, which is marginally ahead of our amended target of 650 units. Our ASP on our core units was $311,000, showing our continued focus on suburban starter home schemes. As you may remember from our interim results, we took the decision in the first half of the year to accelerate the sale of our non-core units to maximise cash generation and deliver a net cash inflow of more than $100 million over a 12-month period. This decision resulted in an asset impairment charge of $20.3 million, which you can see on the face of the income statement. Of that $100 million, $24 million was received in 2020, and at year-end, a further $70 million was contracted or reserved for 2021. As of today, this is now $54 million of cash received to date and a further $42 million contracted or reserved, therefore demonstrating that the business has performed very strongly in realising the cash in the timeframe set out. The group's gross profit for the year amounted to $9.5 million versus $51.5 million in 2019 and an overall gross margin of 4.1% versus 18.1% in 2019. The gross margin on our core units is 14.1%, which reflects costs associated with our COVID-19 safety measures and operating protocols, in addition to negative mix effects as units from our new higher margin sites were delayed due to COVID-19. A significant portion of the mix effect and the impact of increased COVID-19 costs are expected to ease this year, and we expect the gross margin for 2021 to be in excess of 16%, with further margin progression in 2022 towards our current spot gross margin of 17%. Our operating loss for the year was 12.7 million versus profit of 29.4 million in 2019, which includes the previously mentioned one-off impairment of 20.3 million. The group generated an underlying operating profit of 7.6 million and an operating margin of 3.3%. The group's central costs for the year were 20.2 million and along with 2 million of depreciation and amortization gives total administrative expenses of 22.2 million, which is broadly consistent with 2019. Currently, we expect our central costs, including depreciation, to return to our pre-COVID growth trajectory and come in around 28 million for 2021. Slide 30 shows our balance sheet at 31 December. Overall inventory number of 821 million is split between land of 619 million and work in progress of 202 million. We have decreased our land portfolio to 619 million from 668 million a year ago and 710 million 18 months ago, showing significant progress in decreasing our net investment in land as part of our overall commitment to improve balance sheet efficiency. We have continued to invest in work in progress in line with the growth trajectory of the business with a year-end balance of 202 million, an increase of 29 million from 173 million at the end of 2019. This well-invested work in progress is fully supported by the 950 contracted or reserved units and will allow us to close these units relatively quickly once the current lockdown measures are lifted. Our non-core developments contribute 58 million to year-end work in progress, and this highlights the importance of the strategy to accelerate the exit from these completed sites and generate in excess of 100 million in cash within the 12-month timeframe. The group's core work in progress is 144 million and spread across 18 active construction sites, which equates to an average of less than 8 million per site, which is where we'd expect an efficient starter home site to be. Building on the narrative of the non-core disposal, slide 31 highlights the optionality that the accelerated exit gives the business. It allows us to focus not only financial resources, but also management's time on the core segments of the business. It will assist in funding the significant ramp up to 3,000 units. It improves and strengthens the balance sheet by converting fully constructed inventory into cash quickly and allows us to capitalise on any future opportunities that enhance the value of the business. Slide 32 gives additional colour on the reduction of our land bank over the last 18 months. As you can see, we have already reduced the land bank by 91 million to 619 million at 31 December, and we are well on our way to hitting the targeted reduction of 100 million. Going forward, further investment efficiencies are expected through our investment in strategic and structured land acquisitions, such as subject to planning deals, which we've recently completed two of, and also through partnership wins. Moving to slide 33, and as I said at the outset, cash management was hugely important for the business during the shutdown and on reopening with our focus on finishing the units closest to completion to ensure quick and recurring cash generation. The business reduced its net cash outflow from operating activities to 11 million in 2020 from 70 million in 2019, which is a very strong performance given the COVID restrictions in place during the year. A significant driver of this reduction was the reduction in inventory spend, which was effectively zero for the year versus a spend of 119 million in 2019. Within this net zero spend, there was investment in WIP of 39 million, but offsetting this, we had a net cash inflow of 39 million from land. We finished the year in a net cash position of 36 million, which demonstrates that the business managed its financing through the various COVID-19 challenges very effectively and leaves the business in a strong balance sheet, with a strong balance sheet for the continued growth of the business. In the last few weeks, we finalised our new five-year 250 million debt facility. The facility consists of a 100 million term debt component, as well as a committed RCF of 150 million. We have also increased the number of banks participating in the syndicate from 3 to 4. The structure and quantum of the new facility will provide a mature funding base and strong optionality for the business for the next 5 years while continuing our significant growth trajectory in reaching our target of 3,000 units per annum. On slide 34, I'll conclude and I want to reiterate the strategic priorities for the business and the progress we've made against each of them. On the reduction in net land investment, we have achieved a 91 million net reduction to date. On the increased unit output, we've amended and adapted our construction programs to maintain our target of 1150 units for the year. We continue with our goal of 3,000 units in 2024 or quicker if possible. On our improved operating margin, we've got guidance of in excess of 16% for gross margin in 2021, with further margin progression in 2022 towards our current spot portfolio margin of 17%. At scale, our central costs are expected to be sub 4% of revenue. Forward funding of urban projects. The attractiveness of the asset class continues to increase, but the timing of processes is very much dependent on the normalisation of the operating environment. The market fundamentals remain strong, and we've certainly maintained and potentially improved our operational capabilities during COVID, and we are very well positioned once the construction restrictions are lifted. Our strategy and areas of focus are very much unchanged, but to complement the guidance already in place, we plan to give further guidance on a range of measures at the AGM, such as capital allocation, a leverage policy, and medium-term return on equity targets. I'll now hand you back to Stephen to run through a quick conclusion.
Thank you, Michael. Turning to the conclusion section, attractive customer offering is driving reservations and completions, as you can see from our order book of 950 units. Construction capabilities have highlighted our ability to deliver no matter what the challenges presented to us. We are recognised as a partner of choice for institutions and the state when you see the amount of institutional product we are delivering to the overall market. Disciplined capital management will deliver strong returns into the future for the business and its shareholders, while all the time delivering the greatest social benefit at the lowest environmental cost. Finally, the key attractions of the business. The fundamentals remain highly favourable and are more sustainable than ever. Glenveagh's focus on three attractive segments in the Irish market in both suburban, urban and partnership will deliver the greatest returns into the future for our shareholders. The opportunity to create the leading home building platform in Ireland is there in front of us, and we have the operation to deliver on 3,000 units per annum. Finally, I'd like to thank all the staff who work with Glenveagh and along with Glenveagh for how they rose to the challenge presented by COVID during 2020 and 2021. I'd like to pass you back now for any questions.
Thank you. So as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, you can press star two. You will be advised when to go ahead. So our first question comes from the line of Colin Sheridan from Davy. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, guys.
Morning, Colin.
A few for me, if I may. Maybe just starting on build costs. I mean, you've clearly given some guidance on that this morning. I wonder if you'd give us a little bit more colour in terms of where there might be any pressures from an inflationary perspective, and then whether that extends to any supply chain problems. I mean, has there been any shortages, or is it just inflation coming through at the moment? Secondly, then, I mean, you've clearly got a very strong set of numbers in terms of sales in H2 from last year, and that's continued into this year. Can you give us maybe a bit more of a feel for how that's progressing in more recent weeks with the extension of the lockdown, and whether that demand has continued through February? And then finally, I mean, I see you've got a pretty comprehensive sustainability report published today. Could you maybe just walk us through how much impact you think sustainability is having on your customers' decision-making process?
Yeah, thanks, Colin. I'll deal with the first two, and then maybe I'll let Connor come in on the third one. I suppose build costs, yeah. So we said we were seeing about 3%. The predominant, obviously, there was new wage agreements agreed at the end of November in 2021, which obviously we've implemented across the business. So that was approximately 3% on wages. Probably where we've seen the pressure on price increases is predominantly related to the commodity side of the business in relation to the likes of timber, iron ore, things like that. It's been basically materials we've seen where the pressure has. Supply chain issues in the system absolutely were there in 2020, and that obviously related to China going down first, Then that spread into Europe in the first quarter and into the second, and going through the second quarter. And we've seen that effect predominantly here in the third quarter of 2020. But I would say they've probably abated at this stage. We've negotiated all our material packages now for the next 18 to 24 months. So we feel in a pretty good position. The other thing too, what I would say about the business is we're probably carrying about 3 months in advance at all times at the moment. Just to give us that protection to make sure that we have the material on board. I suppose a lot of that planning came around Brexit. We originally were planning for Brexit in 2019, roll on another year, and I suppose we had those tools in place to make sure we could work with that. On the subcontractor side, we would probably see minimal enough inflation. You're seeing benefits of the office market is probably going to be cooler for the next 12 to 24 months in the sense of just speculative projects that are not going to commence. So we see no pressures on that side. We may see a few benefits into the future. And then generally on the subcontractor side, I suppose we would feel pretty confident. This is the way we think how the year is going to go. If you think about the position we're at the moment, there's an element of infrastructure in front of all sites. But what's probably happening up and what will happen quite early once things are lifted is stock will be completed quite quickly. And you should see a freeing up of labour into the third quarter of this year. The likes of your plumbers and electricians, your internal plastering, things like that, will become a lot slacker because the commencements simply aren't on the ground. And the smaller developers won't be very active out there. So we'll probably see benefits into the third quarter of the year. On the reservations front, absolutely seen strong momentum throughout the second half of 2020. I would say we were in a very good position by the first half anyway. We were building a substantial order book, even at the very start of COVID. But the momentum definitely kicked on into the second half. For the first 8 weeks of the year, it's been very strong out there. I would say that our customer is very comfortable with the digital facilities that we're offering them. They're very comfortable to work through that process, engage with the sales team. They've done all their research before they engage with the team, and that's available to them. So pretty much as soon as they can, when they are able to make a decision, they move quite quickly. I suppose the most positive thing for us that we see in our reservations is the limited amount of cancellations. So that just goes down to the quality of the leads that we're now getting in the business. So that's very strong. So I'd say the first 8 weeks has been very robust. As I said in the presentation, we are pretty limited now on what we can sell into, and I suppose the sales team will start focusing, probably before the start of the summer, will start focusing on looking at the order book into 2022, because it is limited on what we can deliver for 2021 at this stage. On the sustainability, I'll give it to Conor here.
Yeah, just on the customer demand on the sustainability, Colin, I think, you know, the demographic of our customer, they are very focused. And on the environmental side, what they're also concerned about is the life cycle cost of ownership of the dwelling. And, you know, we've some stats in the report there where, you know, our houses are costing less than €380 a year to heat. All of our homes are A2. And I suppose that's driving us to do more. We've now, on a number of our schemes, we've the option for customers to upgrade from an A2 house to an A1 house just by installing an additional solar panel on the roof. And I suppose they're also engaging with us on the after-sales process in terms of how they run and operate the new systems that we have in their house to make sure that they can run them in the most efficient manner. So it's it's definitely something that's moved up the purchases agenda, and it's something we're working with them on to do more.
That's great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Tom.
The next The next question comes from the line of Dudley Shanley from Goodbody. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. Just a couple of questions, if I may. First of all, Stephen, you mentioned a couple of times that the smaller developers won't be progressing sites later in the year, is your belief. What's the big barrier for progression of sites there? Then secondly, I was just wondering, Help to Buy, obviously the expansion of the scheme from 20,000 to 30,000 has been a help. How many customers do you think are actually using that in terms of your recent bookings? And then finally, I was just wondering if you could talk us through, I guess, reworking your projects in terms of being able to maintain completions guidance for the full year, despite having your hands tied behind your back for the first 4 months or so.
Yeah, Sure. Morning, Dougley. Yeah, the smaller developers on what we're seeing on the ground, I suppose there's a couple of elements. I would say, and I probably quoted this in the September results, that we certainly got a sense that the smaller developers, when the pandemic came into Ireland, were extremely, you know, they were extremely nervous, and I suppose their focus on was finishing up what they're doing. I suppose there's a couple of key points that you're just looking at that's in the data. First of all, if you look at the transaction levels in the overall land market, that's an indication that the smaller developers are not buying sites out there at the moment, or they're limited to the buying. I'd say you're also seeing the funding side of that, where they're using alternative financing, being more conservative at the moment and just unsure of the terms that they're going to lend into the future. So that, I'd say those aspects are probably prohibiting the smaller guys more than anything. Help to buy, absolutely, it was a positive step from the government. It was well indicated in the programme from government. We'd certainly welcome it. Ultimately, it's helping people get on the property ladder. We just see it as a benefit. Yes, a lot of our customers do avail of it. You know, if you look at the amount of our portfolio, you know, our suburban product, if you take an average of 350,000, they're qualifying for it, so absolutely they're taking up. But we're also seeing our customers as well coming in where, you know, a customer last year might have wanted to buy, maybe could have only went for a two-bedroom home. They're now has aspirations to reach for a three-bedroom home. And a lot of that has been driven by, I suppose, fundamentally they've had a larger saving pool brought to the table when they're buying their home. But also just their working lives now has dramatically changed in the last 12 months. And they're looking at the future for the next 2 to 5 years. Are they working 3 days a week in the office and 2 days at home? And certainly they're designing their lives to cater for that, and we're seeing that demand across the board. Just on reiterating the 1,150 units for this year, and I suppose we came out in January the 6th with our results for 2020, and obviously we came out at a bad moment because the government were just coming out with their restrictions. What was very unclear at the time was how long the restrictions would go on for, but what exactly was the detail behind the restrictions. I suppose luckily we got indications from, we came out on Wednesday, but by the Friday evening, the government had given us the access to deliver all private homes up to the end of January, and then all social units could remain under construction. So I suppose for us, and we've seen this in the business, we've seen a strong delivery of closings in the early part of the year, say versus this time last year, which was really helped by January. But also then obviously being able to deliver on our social units to the end of April has been a huge advantage as well. If you think of developments like, we have a minimum of 10% social housing, you'll have an element of turnkey on top of that. But we've also got developments where you've got our enhanced lease product that is directly linked to social housing and the government. And that's the likes of our Adelaide Road in Bray and an element of our Leixlip development. So that is all really benefit, and I suppose we've made really good progress on that front. But then I suppose if you look at the WIP invested and where we came to year end, I suppose strategically we refocused the business around September. I would say that, you know, when we seen the government come out with a commitment to deliver 13,000 houses, we made sure that we got all our social developments up and running and put that into the order book quickly, because I suppose we were concerned if anything happened into the future lockdowns, social housing with that commitment would be allowed to operate. But then also on our sites, I suppose, the ways we came about thinking about it, we did a lot of infrastructure up front. And I suppose the construction teams really concentrated on delivering roads, services, utilities into their sites. And that has really narrowed the construction gap from the time to deliver. So all the sites that we need now to deliver in 2021 have all the water, all the sewerage, have all the roads, the services, the public paths, et cetera, et cetera. And that has closed down the actual superstructure time period. We can now turn a house in around 16 to 18 weeks, depending on its on the topology of that house and what we're delivering. So that has opened up the taps a bit for us, that we feel, yeah, we're not going to have a lot, but we feel comfortable that we're able to deliver the 1,150 units for 2021.
That's great. Thanks.
The next question comes from the line of Glynis Johnson from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Morning. I actually have two sort of bigger picture questions, actually. The first one, just in terms of government policy. You've obviously highlighted a number of positives, but I'm wondering if you can just talk about if there's anything we need to be thinking about in terms of governments looking for almost some sort of quid pro quo. I'm thinking particularly in terms of tightening regulations, in terms of build, maybe pushing you, above that A2 standard. But also, I appreciate you mentioned the Part 5, but is there anything else we need to be thinking about? And then the second one is in terms of fire safety. Obviously, in the UK, there's been a great deal of discussion about fire safety and fire regulation of build. I just wonder if you can just talk us through what or how you see that impacting, yourselves in terms of what you've previously built, but also going forward.
Absolutely. Yeah, I suppose government policy, I would say this is definitely a government that is focused on increasing supply. The government's own research, and particularly the housing department, have indicated that they believe that natural housing demand on a per annum basis is a minimum of 33,000 units. That's not taking into account any shortfall. I suppose what I see on the regulation, obviously we flagged Part 5, but we see that dropping more and more. The minister realises that to get supply up, he needs to create viability on the projects. So I think that would be counter-cyclical to deliver. I think his focus by creating the Land Development Agency, that will be more focused on delivering affordable and social homes on those developments. So I think private developers will be allowed to operate on private schemes just to deliver the majority of product to the private customer. On building regulations, and I suppose it's been a journey for the last probably 12 to 13 years. I would say in 2007, when the housing crisis, the housing crash came upon Ireland, that probably building regulations were poorly regulated. Our codes were substantially, they were poor in standard to across the board. And there has been a dramatic improvement on that over the last 10 years. We introduced a system called BCAR, where the developer and the assigned certifiers take responsibility for delivering housing, and they have quite onerous codes on them. So that has improved the building standards dramatically. The track and trace of our developments in the sense of knowing every input product that goes into the developments and the systems we have behind that, we can identify a load of stone when it comes into a site, exactly where it is and what it has been applied to. So I think our building standards has improved. So I don't think there's much work to be done there. Our energy rating, obviously we moved to NZ last year, which is, it's a phenomenal achievement over the number of years. 10 years ago, we were building B3 rated house. Today, we're now delivering at a minimum A2. Moving it to A1 is not going to have a dramatic impact on costs. As Conor outlined, we're actually now offering that to our customers and it has a minimal cost. Fire safety and overall fire regulations in Ireland are quite substantial. And we've seen that on our testing on, be it timber frame kits, be it on apartment developments, be it on the insulation we use. All of those issues, I would say, our fire codes are actually much higher than the UK. So I don't think there's an improvement required there to move our standards up. I'd say it's more the UK might be catching up with where Ireland is today.
Okay, so there's no need to remediate anything that you may have already built to bring it up to what may be a higher fire code?
Absolutely not, no.
Perfect, thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Ronan Dunphy from Investec. Please go ahead.
Hi, folks. Good morning. I will maybe just start with the shared equity scheme. Now, I know we don't have the final details yet, but when it does become active, how significant do you think it could be for your business? And I suppose, will it change how you think about planning your sites in any way in terms of types of units or anything like that? Or maybe because your average price point is already very competitive, there isn't really a need to adjust anything. And then secondly, you mentioned that buyers were turning up with higher deposits because of the higher savings rates in the economy. How significant has that been? And is it something you can quantify, or is it just more anecdotal, really? Thanks.
Yeah, I suppose what we've seen is really on the deposit front is the aspirations of our buyers and their demand out there and what they're looking for. As I gave the example, where customers should be focused on maybe purchasing a two-bedroom home, their aspirations is to move to a three-bedroom home, and they're making that effort to save that deposit to close that gap. But I suppose ultimately, you know, you see it from the savings rate. I think it was 10 billion euros has been saved since the start of the pandemic in domestic savings. So there is a phenomenal amount of that out there, and we are seeing that in our particular. I think it's more where our customers have not been affected at all by the pandemic. You know, you take an IT worker, you take civil service, they have not had pay cuts. So ultimately, they're still earning as much, if not more. So their net take-home pay has increased, and ultimately they have nowhere to spend that. So you're seeing that come true. Their main investment now is owning a home or moving up on the property ladder, and we're seeing that across our reservations. The shared equity, as you outlined, correct. The legislation hasn't been fully formed yet. I know they're working through that in Parliament at the moment. I think for us, what's the real benefit is that if you just look at it's in the deck on what page, I'm not sure now, but the size of our portfolio and how much of it is sub 400,000 euros. I suppose by design, we had always designed our portfolio to be affordable. So I suppose we fit in there. I suppose just to take into context what the shared equity is, the minister realizes that developers can only produce a home for a certain price. What really the shared equity is designed is to counterbalance the macroprudential rules. And I look at customers, a typical couple or a single person earning 80,000 euros a year, multiply that by 3.5 and you get to 270. If you put Help to Buy on that at around 10%, you get to 300 grand. But if they are purchasing a home for 350 or 360, and remember, a lot of our couples need to buy a certain kind of product. If you look at the age profile of our customer today, they're an average of 36 years of age. They have moved up the line dramatically, and you've seen that across the board. Whereas versus 10 years ago, our average age of our customer buying our home was around 28.6 years of age. So that's moved up. So the customer coming today has a different dynamic. They may be starting with a young family. They need to get a certain kind of house. And I suppose what shared equity is designed to do is ultimately allow people to bridge that gap. It is a loan. It's not free money. It is only a loan. And I suppose what it's to do is to open up home ownership to a larger cohort of the population. And that's very much a focus of this government. So I think ultimately we really welcome it. We think it's a way of balancing the macroprudential rules. If it wasn't introduced, the only way you could balance it is amend the macroprudential rules. Instead of being 3.5 times mortgage, be 4.5 times or something like that. That would have the other balance. So we think it's a good scheme. We think that we have the right product to deliver into that, and we welcome it when it comes.
Okay, very good. Thanks.
The next question comes from the line of Emily Biddle from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Morning, guys. I hope you're well. Thanks for taking my questions. I've got two, please. The first one is just obviously the order intake rate has been really strong year to date. Should we think about that slowing through the summer, not necessarily because like demand weakens, but just because like the order book is so strong already? Presumably, the fact that if you go to one of your sites, you might not be able to have anything that you can deliver for more than 6 months, does that sort of start to put people off at some point? And do you think that at some point people start to sort of hang on knowing that the equity loan scheme's coming and sort of think, I'll wait for it? So should we expect the order intake rate to sort of naturally slow regardless of what demand's doing through the summer? And then secondly, just on the forward funding deals, I wondered if you had any update there or, what you're seeing really, what we should expect for this year. Thanks.
Thanks, Emily, and good morning. The order book's really good question. I would say that the shared equity scheme, I don't think will have a drastic mindset change on our customers at the moment. Ultimately, it's going to be designed to create home ownership for people who ultimately can't get on the housing ladder. So I don't think it'll affect our present customers. Absolutely, we've obviously a substantial order book already in place for 2021, and obviously we've got to work within the limitations of the restrictions that exist out there at the moment. So yeah, we can't obviously add a lot more to that as we move into towards the summer. We are conscious that we don't want to put too much of a tail on our customers. You know, we don't want them to be hanging there for 9 to 12 months waiting for a home. But I do think the team will start focusing on 2022 and where they can strategically start building that order book, via that, either in PRS or potentially other government initiatives that are out there, that we can start looking at things like that, and then let the private customers come in maybe towards the autumn market and build on the momentum from that. On the forward funds, obviously we're in restrictions here. We're in full lockdown to some degree. Domestic travel or international travel is prohibited, and our institutions are struggling to get on the ground. Now, in saying that, I suppose the systems that we've built in Glenveagh, we've shown how good we can interact with the institutions. An example of that is the deal we've just started to complete in Marina Village. Realis have been able to close that and still not been able to get on the ground. I think that's taking comfort from what Glenveagh deliver, but also just what we've, the systems we've built to support their data requirements. I would say that until the restrictions are lifted, the institutions, the foreign institutions, particularly in continental Europe, are struggling to get on the ground, and they want to physically view new product. There's certainly inbounds in the sense of when we talk to institutions, and they're certainly looking for pipeline. Where is it coming? When can it be delivered? And I suppose more importantly, when can developers get on site and actually commence that? So I think you'll see more on the institutional side probably come into the start of the second quarter or moving into the start of the second half of the year. We'd certainly like to see more on that. Obviously, we're going to work hard on the docks. We're doing a lot of work behind the scenes there. We're progressing the planning. Probably past AGM, we'd be able to give a better update on the progress we're making there.
Great. Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Johnny Cooper from Numis. Please go ahead.
Morning, guys.
Morning, Johnny.
Two questions from me, please. Firstly, on planning, and Stephen, you outlined the progress that you're making there. Just wondering what opportunities there are within the Irish planning system to get gross margin uplift when you do take land through the planning process. And the second question would be in terms of the refinancing, given the much larger RCF and term loan. Just wondering whether this does enable you to fund a bit more of urban build yourself as opposed to forward funding it, and if you do, what impact that could have on returns if there is a gross margin benefit, and also whether that could get these developments moving a bit quicker given the reticence on the institutional side at the moment.
Yeah, sure, Johnny. I'll let Michael take the RCF. I suppose ultimately the business is in a really strong position with the net cash position at year end, and obviously getting the facility in place is a great achievement. Just on the planning and what we're seeing out there, the planning system in Ireland is extremely onerous. There's been a lot of commentary on it. We introduced the fast track planning system. That has obviously brought conditions where you're going directly to onboard Pinala. I suppose what we showed in the deck was, a lot of developments are being driven to 40 to 50 units per hectare. And what that has implied is a substantial part of the development, maybe 30, 40%, is being driven to apartments. And that obviously causes viability issues because the apartments ultimately to de-risk the private customer, there's a very, very limited demand on that. So really you're dealing with the apartments from the institutional side, be it enhanced lease or be it PRS. So that has probably slowed down. I suppose what we've tried to do is come up with a product, and we've done a lot of work behind the scenes in this. The planning team working with the local authorities, working with the planning system in the housing department. And we're bringing a new product to the table where we can limit the amount of apartments, and I suppose we can give a better product for our customers and enhance their living conditions in that development. So we're looking forward to that. We're trying it on our first scheme. It's very much been embraced by the local authorities and the planning regulator and things like that. And they're very much favourable of this. They see this as a way of, innovation in the planning system and bringing a product that is more viable. The long-term effects on gross margin, what you can do, how you move the land bank, there's certain, obviously getting the right product obviously makes, more attractive gross margin on the selling price you can sell for that. The uptick between a site that's planned and versus a site that is unplanned, you're probably talking somewhere between 200 bips and 250 bips, depending on what you're doing. So there is an absolute upside where you're buying a site, doesn't have permission, put it through the system, versus buying a ready-to-go site out there. But then I suppose you have to value, you know, you have to take into account what's the return on capital employed, you know, benefits to the business. If you can move the site much quicker, you're moving your capital much quicker versus waiting 12 to 18 months to bring it through the system. So I suppose it's a work in progress is where I'd leave it. Michael, if
Yeah, on the urban piece, Johnny, no, I suppose the short answer is no, it hasn't changed our strategy in relation to forward funding. Our plan is still to forward fund the large urban stuff. I suppose given the scale, it's just something we've always made the decision. It's not something we want to take on our own balance sheet from a WIP perspective. So we'll continue to look to forward fund those. You know, the facility is more for funding the suburban growth.
Just one point, Johnny, that probably on the planning that I didn't highlight, and it's somewhere in the presentation. We're actually now starting to acquire sites subject to planning, and we're starting to see that come into the Irish system, something like the UK model, where the developer is doing an agreement with the landowner, you're bringing it through the planning system, you're implementing your product, and you are seeing the benefits of capturing that upside ultimately across the book. So that's something that we've just started to see come to the table. We hope to see more of that as the land market evolves over the next number of years.
Thanks, guys. That's very clear. And just in terms of where you're acquiring sites subject to planning, just wondering how that would be accounted for on the balance sheet.
I suppose we're effectively not paying for it until we get planning, and then once it gets planning, we close the deal and pay for it at that point.
Brilliant. No, thanks, guys.
We have no further questions coming through, so I will now hand back to Stephen for any closing remarks.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you for joining this morning. I know it's been very difficult times. Look forward to when we get back to full normality to obviously visiting you in person and getting back to that. So just all I say is thank you. Thank you for your support and stay safe.
Thank you for joining today's conference. You may now disconnect your lines. Hosts, if you could please stay connected and await further instruction. Thank you.